We're going through our core beliefs booklet in our core group. They're not affiliated, but kind of. As far as what we believe in church, we're going over that tonight. So as churches, national churches, or the Great Commission movement of churches, a number of years ago put together a core beliefs book on basically values and common practices that, as a movement of churches, we believe. So that's kind of what we're going over tonight. So tonight we're going over the nations being reached with the gospel. So talking about the Great Commission. So amen. Let's pray, and we can read through this piece of paper. Jesus, thanks for tonight. Thanks we got to sing a song to you, and we got to pray to you, and get to hang out, and just be together. I love being together with these guys. Thanks that I get to teach tonight. I pray that you would be with me as I teach. You would just speak through me and help me to speak boldly. That you'd teach us all something tonight, Jesus. We love you, and we say these things in your name. Amen. Okay, so value number one. Out of our love for God and people, the great commandment in Matthew 22, our mission as individuals and as churches is to fulfill the Great Commission. Okay, so we can find this in Matthew 28, 18 to 20. It says, "And Jesus came and said to them, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age.'" If you've been coming to the Rock Church for any amount of time, you've probably heard this verse a lot. If you've been coming to small group or house church, you've probably heard this verse a lot. Or if you've even just hung out with any of us, you've probably heard this verse. That's because this is what Jesus commands us to do. This is our mission as a church. Because of this paragraph right here, the church has continued growing for the last 2,000 years. It's what we do. We're passionate about it, and we love the Great Commission. Point number two says, while we understand that God sets apart some people in the church to be full-time missionaries, it's also God's desire that each individual in the church personally embrace the Great Commission. All believers are to be on mission to do their part in reaching their city, nation, and the world for Jesus Christ. So this is talking about being individually sold out and individually embracing the Great Commission and sharing the gospel in your own life, in your own circle of influence. So this means that your coworkers, your friends, your family, your roommate, whoever, classmates, whoever knows, whoever's in your circle of influence, that they know that you're different, that you're gonna go through trials different, you're gonna suffer differently than other people, you're gonna have joy when there is seemingly no joy. We're gonna be different as Christians, and we can talk to them about it. That we're sold out, we personally embrace the Great Commission and share the gospel with people in our circle of influence. Number three, God's will is that while personally embracing this mission, every individual work together with others as a team, serving within his or her giftedness and unique role as part of that team in fulfilling the Great Commission. So the first value was the Great Commission. We love it. The second value was to individually embrace the Great Commission. And the third value here is to embrace the Great Commission as a team, or as a church. One of the verses down here, I'm just going to go to read Ephesians 4, 15 and 16. It says, "Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it's equipped, when each part is working properly," that's my favorite part, "when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love." So, Christian, you were made to be in the church. You were made for the church, and the church was made for you, because God has given us each individual gifts, and God uses those gifts to use his church and make his church a well-oiled machine to where people with special giftings complement people who don't have those kind of giftings but have other giftings, which makes sense. I mean, if we were all evangelists in here, everyone would be out preaching and nobody would be having people over for dinner. Right? If everybody was having people over to dinner, there would be nobody to lead the church. I mean, we'd get together and just be chatty Cathys. We wouldn't there would be no leadership. So God specifically gives people giftings so that we can reach more people with the gospel. Let's see, let's move on to 4. We believe that a key part of the Great Commission is not only evangelism, but also discipleship, where each follower of Jesus Christ is instructed to obey all that Jesus commanded. So, if you're not being discipled, there's a problem. If somebody's not coming alongside of you and discipling you, there's a problem. And if you're not doing the same, if you're not discipling somebody, there's a problem there too, because Jesus commands us to go and make disciples. That's what he tells us to do. So, I mean, along with the Great Commission, discipleship is something that we take seriously here. And there are plenty of opportunities to get plugged in, to get to know people, to come along somebody who might not be as far along in the faith as you are. You've got every man's Monday, something Tuesday, Wednesday, there's Bible studies and core group and men's night and women's night, and we've got all sorts of stuff. Throughout the summer, we had every man's Monday, we had Sunday fun day, we've got a lot of days. We do a lot of stuff. We carve pumpkins together, we go out and hang out after church Fridays. There's always something going on. I mean, I'm sure if you ever wanted to hang out with anybody, there would be somebody to hang out with at the Rock Church. We're always doing something together. And discipleship is something we take seriously. So moving on to common practices. 1, the practice of churches in our association has been to equip and train members to effectively share their faith with non-believers, to sow the gospel with family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, and strangers, so that your circle of influence. So this is our job as pastors and leaders of this church, is to train and equip you guys to be able to share your faith with people. And we have all sorts of resources for this. We have an outreach class where you basically go and, I think it's like, 40 or 50 verses that you memorize? Something like that. And basically you start out memorizing verses, and you go from who God is, who man is, what man's done, what God's done for us, how the only reconciliation between God and man is Jesus, and then at the end you learn how to lead people to Christ, basically how to pray and lead people to Christ. It's an amazing resource. We don't have anything scheduled for that, but I'm sure if enough people wanted to go through that, we could get something figured out. We also have outreach at the temple. Paul has been going to the temple for, 7 years? Every week? And if you wanted to go learn how to speak to somebody spiritually and how to start a spiritual conversation, how to share your faith, you could go with Paul. You don't have to talk to anybody. You can just go hand out stuff and just watch how Paul and his friends talk to people. It's really cool. It's a good way to learn how to share your faith with people. We also have resources or books at the bookstore you can get to kind of help you to turn normal everyday conversations into spiritual conversations. I mean, after doing this for a while, you kind of figure out how to ask some questions that are kind of probing questions that they'll ask the same question back, and you know that you can switch that question to a conversation about Jesus. It's pretty cool. So you learn how to do that. But that's our responsibility, is to teach you guys and to equip and train you guys on how to share your faith. 2, our church members take to heart Paul's words when he said that he did all things for the sake of the gospel, and consider how their life decisions regarding family, moves, career opportunities, etc., may affect their success in reaching the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. So life decisions. We all have to make some big life decisions. And one of the things that concerns me most is when somebody comes up to me and they say, "Hey, I just found this new house out in the middle of nowhere. We're going to move there." When somebody comes up and says, "Hey, I just got this promotion in such and such a city, and we're going to move." And I start asking them about the church, and they haven't looked into any kind of churches that are out there. They haven't looked into any statements of faith, nothing. They have absolutely no idea what they're going to do when they get there. They're making these huge life decisions with really no plan as to where they're going to get spiritually fed. So I mean, their spiritual growth is the number one thing that concerns me, first of all. And then the second thing, obviously, is that some of these decisions will affect the successfulness of them sharing the gospel. I've seen a lot of people, talked to a lot of people who said, yeah, I used to go to church and I moved to Utah and I just haven't looked for a new one. It's like, you should probably find a church, brother. So let me just urge you guys, if you end up making a life decision like this, if you end up moving somewhere or getting a new job, please just look for churches in the area. Make sure you know where your church home is going to be. Make sure you do some due diligence, read some statements of faith, find somewhere that you agree with, and just go serve. Go hang out there and serve so that you can reach more nations and more people with the gospel. Number three, churches and members in our association seek to be culturally relevant to those we are trying to teach or trying to reach with the gospel. Culturally relevant. This one can be kind of dangerous. I've seen people who are so culturally relevant that they either end up with both feet in the world and kind of forget all about Jesus, or they end up essentially becoming hypocrites, and they've got one group of friends that they can speak openly with, and then another group of church friends, and they really hope that neither of the two will ever meet because they'll find out that they're just a hypocrite. This is a very dangerous thing. Jesus says to be in the world, but not of the world. So you have to be very careful with being too culturally relevant. I think that the Rock Church does a good job with this. When I first got invited to the Rock, one of my friends invited me, and he's like, come on, man, they got a rock wall, they've got a pool table, there's like this Blitz video game thing, and I'm like, cool, man, like, that's probably cool for some people, like, I'm not really into that, but it was reaching a certain group of people, and we still have a rock wall, that's pretty cool. So that reached a certain group of people. I mean, for a long time, there were lots of outdoorsy climber-type people there, and it worked. What worked for me, what they reached me with their cultural relevance, was music. I mean, the rock music was huge. I started listening to Steel's band, and then that's kind of what sucked me in was it was a church band that was culturally relevant. They had loud drums and they had, you know, amazing guitars, and it was really cool. That's what sucked me in. I think for a long time there, God did something really, really cool where he brought a ton of really, really great musicians to the church because of this, of us trying to be culturally relevant and reach the world through music. I remember standing there, my cousin came, and I was like, yeah, so over here, this is Alex, he's a bass player for the Almost, and there's Nick and Kenny, they also play for the Almost, and there's Brian and Jesse over there, they used to play for Clifton, and Tim over there, he's with Letter Kills, and I mean, these are all bands that my cousin, like, listened to all the time. So he was like, are you serious? This is, like, all these people are under one roof? And I think God did a really cool thing there with bringing musicians to the Rock Church. And I think he's still doing that. Okay, let's go on to number four. Although we aspire to reach all generations with the gospel, we place a special emphasis on ministry to the next generation. Our twofold strategy is to equip parents in the church to train their children and to reach unbelieving and unchurched young people through various ministries. So when you bring your kids here on a Friday night, and you check them in the computer, and you're up here learning about Jesus, they're not back there coloring pictures of dragons and watching Toy Story. They're back there learning about Jesus. The things that our kids are learning in that curriculum are amazing. Our kids are learning about Jesus at this church. I think one of the coolest things and the best examples I have of raising up godly kids is Rick and Neva Whitney. I mean, when we were at they've raised up an army of soldiers for Christ. It's really cool. When I was at my first pastor's GCLI, we were kind of going around introducing ourselves, and there was a good chunk of people in that room, a good percentage of people in that room who were pastors, who they'd say, yeah, I met Josh in high school, or I met Josh in college and joined a small group, and like, there was a bunch of people. Josh reached out to me on campus and started going to a small group, or I was roommates with Josh, and the same goes for his whole family. I mean, he's got a brother and a bunch of sisters, and they're all just making a huge impact in college. And I think that's a really cool example of training your kids to be able to share their faith, to go out into the world and to be able to talk to people about Jesus, to engage in spiritual conversations. It's a twofold strategy. Training our kids, loving our kids, teaching them about Jesus. Part five, church planting is a key strategy in fulfilling the Great Commission. So one time, a church was in Iowa, and it planted a church in Colorado. A church in Colorado planted a church in Sandy, Utah. Church in Sandy, Utah planted a church in Salt Lake City, Utah. Church in Salt Lake City planted a church in Taylorsville, and we're here today. This has been going on ever since Jesus commanded this Great Commission. Churches have been being planted, people have been built up and sent to plant churches, and it's just been ongoing. That's how God decided to do this. It's through personal relationships with people, through having people in our homes, through talking to people, discipling people. That's how God chose to reach the world with his gospel. It's planting churches. We are a church plant. Number six, participation in short-term mission teams domestically and internationally has been a common practice of Great Commission churches. So I haven't been on too many missions. I know a lot of you have been on a lot of missions, but since I've been coming to the Rock, I think we've sent a team to Mexico to build a hospital. Is that what it was? Or houses or something. We've sent teams to Honduras. We've sent teams to Europe a lot. Domestically, we've sent teams to Denver and a bunch of other places within the neighboring states. And we did a mission to the city a couple years ago where basically we went out and shared the gospel with people. We went out and served like a printing press place. I can't remember. And then we like painted the downtown church. But there are four things that I have noticed about mission trips. There's four things that usually always happen. So there's the gospel is shared, whether it's going out on campus and taking spiritual surveys, or whether it's standing on the street and talking to people or whatever that is. The gospel is always shared. There's always some type of outreach, flyering and then playing a concert and then having people out in the crowd sharing the gospel with people, having spiritual conversations. The second thing is serving. So there's always seems to be some type of serving opportunity that's there, whether it's painting a church building or building a hospital or whatever it may be. There's always some kind of serving there. And the next one is fellowship. And I think some of the coolest memories I have are when I was hanging out with people painting a building down in Colorado, just hanging out and chatting. I mean, it was fun. We got to hang out and we got to just do a bunch of different things and get to know each other a lot better. I think one of the most overlooked things is just the team that's sent is really encouraging to the church that they're sent to. I think especially in dark places like in Europe where there aren't too many Christians, I think it's probably very overlooked that as a team goes to Europe to on a mission trip, they're very encouraging. I mean, some of these pastors and their wives haven't seen like excitement for Jesus like this in a long, long time. I think it's really cool to be able to do that. So we do go on mission trips. Let's see, number seven. Great Commission churches practice acts of compassion and service to the poor and needy in our churches, in our local communities, and beyond. So a couple good examples of this is like Operation Christmas Child. Like we're going to fill a bunch of boxes and send them overseas, and we're just going to bless a bunch of kids with stuff that is very easily accessible for us. I mean, we just go down to the store and pick it up, but there's nowhere for these kids to get some of this stuff. Another thing is like the food pantry they're talking about putting in the basement, talking about remodeling the basement, putting a food pantry down there. There's always like a bin out there if you want to put food in there. That's to serve people and to help people in need. Let's see, help out the Salt Lake City mission. And honestly, in this room, there are people who are extremely generous to each other. I mean, I've seen some extremely generous things go on in within this group of people. So good job on that, guys. Very generous people. Number eight, based on the example in Acts 1:8, Great Commission churches have generally sought to follow a principle of progressive geographical expansion. What that means is reaching people in their city, their region, their nation, and the world. So Acts 1:8 says, Jesus says to his disciples, "You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all Judea and Samaria, and to the end of the earth." So it's a geographical progression is how it works. Nine, let's see. Oh, this is a good one. I thought about this one for a while. In international ministry, we believe both in Christians leaving their own country to spread the gospel to other countries and in entrusting the work to the nationals. Because of cultural and language factors, we prefer whenever possible to entrust the reaching of a particular country to the nationals who have been saved and raised up. So you guys know the win the lost, build the believer, send the sanctified. It's basically what Paul did. We see this going on with Paul all the time, how he'll go into a city, he'll share the gospel, a bunch of people will get saved, a church will be built up, and then he'll leave just to do it all over again. And that's where we get the qualifications for an elder, is when Paul he's writing to Timothy and to Titus, telling those guys how to raise up leaders, how to raise up pastors within those groups of people. So I thought that was a good one. 10, we favor an intergenerational and geographical approach in which intergenerational churches and intergenerational regions of churches are started and built within a city, state, or nation whenever possible. So, any given Friday, you can look around here and you can see multiple generations of the same family. Thinking like the Edwards, there's Tubbs and Debbie, and then there's Brian and Celise, and there's Wesley and Piper. I mean, you see lots of intergenerational. You see the Skeens are usually here, then my wife and our kids, and there's lots of that going on any given Friday. 11, because of Jesus' exhortation in Matthew 9:38, a practice of Great Commission churches is to pray for the multiplication of workers who will proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. So to pray for workers. You guys remember the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few? Quote from Jesus. Well, right after that, he says, "Therefore pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." So there's a difference between a Christian who comes every Saturday or every whatever Friday now, and they sit there and they fill out the blanks and they clock out and they go home and then they come back next Friday and do the same thing. There's a difference between that guy and the people who are going out standing on the corners for hours at a time, passing out tracts, getting their hands dirty, talking to multiple people every night, and going down to the mission and serving and helping and serving at church and helping. I mean, there's a difference between an average Christian and a worker. I think we have a great room full of workers here. I mean, I look around the room and I think almost every single one of you are serving in some capacity. And that's very encouraging to me. So thank you guys. Thank you guys very much. But let's keep praying for workers because it's God's harvest. It says, I'll read it again. It says, "Therefore pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." It's his harvest. Just pray that he'll raise up leaders to go out and or workers to go out and do some work. On these papers, I have four discussion questions. Let's discuss for probably, 10, 15 minutes? And then we'll have somebody come up and close us in prayer.